This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, is Michigan ready for the next recession? Citizens Research Council of Michigan President Eric Lufer joins us to discuss his organization's report on the state's rainy day fund. But first, if you were listening to Morning Edition on Thanksgiving Day, you and everyone else tuned in across the country may have heard WMUK's Sevilla Man report on how some big box retailers are keeping their property tax bills low. She's going to tell us more about something called the dark store theory. Yes. Thank you for being here, Sevilla.
Good to be here, Gordon.
So let's start with that. What is the dark store theory?
Well, the dark store theory has a kind of mysterious sounding name, but in this case, dark store really just means vacant store or empty store. And so the dark store theory is invoked when a business, and mostly we're talking about national scale big box retailers, when a business compares the value of its building to the value of a dark or vacant store. And so it works like this. I think most of us are familiar with, if you're a homeowner, you pay property tax on your house. And so similarly, if you own a business and you own the building that your business is in, you pay property tax on that building. And if you get a tax bill and you decide that it's too high, you can appeal that tax bill. But of course, you have to justify the lower rate that you're asking for. And so there's different ways to appraise a property to arrive at the value. And one way to do that is with comparables. So basically, you're just going out and finding properties that are like yours and comparing the value of those properties to yours. You know, again, with houses, if you've sold a house, if you've hired an appraiser to look around and find other houses nearby and compare the value, it's a similar kind of thing. So you're looking around for comparable buildings. And so we come back to the dark store theory here, where you've got businesses that are looking around, looking for comparables, comparing their building's value to those comparables in the hopes of lowering their tax bill. And some of the comparables they're choosing are dark or vacant stores. And the Michigan Tax Tribunal, and that's the body that in this state hears these tax appeals, has been hearing quite a few of these, as they're called, dark store appeals on taxes. And Roger McCarty, who's the Cascade Township assessor, and he's on the board of the International Association of Assessing Officers, says that that these appeals have gotten quite a lot of traction with our state tax tribunal.
There were some tribunal judges who had some sympathy towards the argument and also the quality of the cases that were brought to them. The dark store proponents, whatever you feel about the validity of the argument, they have been very well prepared, and they have excellent attorneys. And the appraisers and the appraisals that they've submitted, although I think that there's problems with those appraisals, they look good.
That's Cascade Township Assessor Roger McCarty. Yeah, so as he was saying, the Michigan Tax Tribunal has upheld quite a few of these dark store appeals. Now, what retailers will say about these appeals is look, there's really no problem with comparing an open functioning store and an open building with a closed one, because we're talking about property tax here, and property tax is about the building. It's not about what's inside the building. As one attorney that I talked to put it, if I win the lottery, the value of my house doesn't change. Well, it's the same for businesses.
Even if you put a big screen TV in your house, that doesn't necessarily drive up your property
exactly.
tax bill.
You can you can have a fantastic art collection or the largest big screen TV ever, and it shouldn't affect how much your assessor is charging you for your house or for your business, for your building that your business is in. So that's what the retailers say. They say there really is no there. This is normal. It's fine to compare a vacant store with an open store.
But the leaders in local governments, such as perhaps the assessor in Cascade Township or township supervisors, mayors, city managers across the state, see this a little differently. How do they counter that?
Yes. So what the folks on the local units of government side will tell you is it's really not about the vacancy. It's not that the dark store is vacant or empty. It's why it's empty. So it's really not about the vacancy. And I think the name dark store theory gets a little confusing there. It's not the fact that the building is vacant that these local units say make them bad comparables. It's why they're vacant. So why are they vacant? sometimes it has to do with location. 20 or 30 years ago, when this big box store opened, it was on a corner where everybody liked to shop. Well, now the traffic pattern has changed and nobody shops in that part of town anymore. And so it's really not as valuable of a piece of real estate as it had been. But more often, and this really gets to the heart of the issue, it's about deed restrictions.
It was a big box retailer that moved out, put a deed restriction on the property. There were several big box retailers that inquired, but they saw the deed restriction, walked away. It sat on the market forever. And eventually, the first use was as an indoor go-kart arena. Far different from the big box retailer that exists. It was later converted to a sausage factory. And that's the result of deed restrictions.
That's Jack Vancouvering. He represented the city of Escanaba in its appeal in a case involving Menards. We'll get to that a little bit more later. So deed restrictions. There's all kinds of deed restrictions. All kinds of properties have restrictions on their deed that say you can't do one thing or another. Specifically, the ones that are at issue here are what some people call anti-competitive deed restrictions. So if you're a big box store and you're moving out of a store, there's a good chance you're not leaving town for good. You're just opening up a bigger, better store down the street or in another part of town. And you'd rather not have the competition moving into your old box. And there's a way to prevent that. You can put a restriction on the deed that says, this building cannot be a grocery store more than 30,000 feet for 25 years, that kind of thing. So you can put all kinds of restrictions on your old building that keeps the competition from moving in. And so local units will say a box that has a bunch of deed restrictions on it that prevent it from being another big box retailer are simply not comparable to big box stores that don't have those kinds of restrictions. That's just not the same thing.
So as the Michigan Tax Tribunal takes a look at some of these cases and decides that businesses don't owe as much in taxes as originally thought, they come back with a new ruling. What is that meaning to Michigan cities, townships, et cetera, when it comes to their revenue?
When you look at the individual units of government that are taxing these big box stores, we're not talking about usually enormous sums of revenue because we're talking about a township maybe that doesn't collect an enormous amount of tax from that big box store, although it might be a significant enough amount to have an impact on that township's budget. Statewide, though, the impact can accumulate. Dave Maturin is a state lawmaker who's introduced legislation to stop these dark store appeals. He also has a background in appraisal. And he says eventually when you get enough of them, these dark store appeals add up.
Statewide, if you look at every big box store, every one of those stores probably is paying $100,000 less than what they should in property taxes to local government. So, and that's a pretty big hit for local governments, especially with the recession they went through and under Proposal A, with the property values plummeting and then staying low under Proposal A. They're trying to fund government, and it's hard enough to get state revenue sharing that hasn't kept up with the promises with the statute. So, I'm not saying the communities are doing this because they're money hungry. I think they're doing it from a fairness aspect.
That's state lawmaker Dave Maturin. What he says, too, is that even if not every big box store is going to court to challenge its tax assessments, they're all benefiting from these decisions, that you'll have chains that go to local governments. They point to the decisions of the tax tribunal and they say, here's what the tribunal's been deciding. We want our taxes lowered or we're going to take you to court and you're going to lose. And as Maturin says, you know, a one-mill township can't necessarily afford to take that to court. Jack Vancouvering, the attorney who represented Escanaba in the Menards case, said that in Indiana, when they looked at this, because Indiana's had some similar kinds of appeals, that what they figured out was that residential taxpayers and smaller businesses are really the ones who end up with a greater tax burden when you've got these appeals from big box stores going through.
I think that dynamic is an important one to consider when you're looking at the real harm of this dark store theory. It's unequal taxation. It's taxation in which residential taxpayers end up bearing a far bigger burden of the revenue need in local jurisdictions than national retailers.
And just coming back to the impact on Michigan, it was pointed out to me by a number of folks that I talked to for this story that Michigan is already kind of in the, you might say, the bargain basement range when you look at the per square foot assessments on big box stores. Prices that that would be considered low in other states are would be considered high for Michigan, and that's something that Jack Vancouvering spoke to again.
Even if I go across the lake to Wisconsin, which taxes 100% of the market value, Michigan taxes only 50% of that market value. Big box store retail considers it a win when they're dropping per square foot assessment values down to $60 a square foot. That hasn't existed in Michigan in years.
Yeah, it hasn't existed in Michigan in years because here in Michigan, we're generally taxing big box stores in a range that's more like $20 a square foot. So you compare that to Wisconsin, where $60 a square foot is considered a good deal. And yeah, Michigan's more down like $20 a square foot. So pretty low.
So let's go back now to that court case in Escanaba regarding Menards. What was actually being decided by the court and how did it turn out?
Yeah, so Menards had opened a store in Escanaba, up in the Upper Peninsula. Escanaba had valued the Menards store at about $8 million. That wasn't the actual tax bill. That was the value of the store. Escanaba said it was about $8 million, and Menards came back and said, no, we think it's actually much closer to $3 million. So, you know, pretty big difference there. Menards took the case to the Michigan Tax Tribunal, which found in favor of Menards. It agreed with Menards' assessment. Escanaba then took the step, which again, not every local government does, of appealing that. So it went to the Michigan Court of Appeals. And what the appeals court found was that the tax tribunal had failed to properly consider how deed restrictions on the comparables that Menards was using had affected the value of those properties. So Menards had a list of, I think it was something like 8 properties that it was comparing its store to, and a number of them had deed restrictions. And so the appeals court said that when Menards did its analysis, it really failed to consider how those deed restrictions had affected the value of the Menards. So the appeals court told the tax tribunal, go back, you have to make those adjustments for those comparables with the deed restrictions, or you can't use them if the data is just not there to make those adjustments. They're also going to be looking at a cost approach when they consider the value of that Menards, so it's not just the comparables. So that case really isn't over. It's going back to the tax tribunal for reconsideration. I should say, too, that what happened recently was that the Michigan Supreme Court upheld that appeals court decision. And that had groups like the Michigan Municipal League celebrating. They were very pleased with this ruling. There's been some talk of, oh, you know, that it's, you know, this is going to take care of this problem in Michigan, or at least it's going to help a lot. I asked state lawmaker Maturin what he thinks the impact is. He said he thinks it's pretty significant. He said he thinks it's quite significant. He still thinks legislation is important. Beyond Michigan, though, what the impact of this Escanaba decision might be, I mean, it applies to Michigan, but Roger McCarty, the Cascade Township assessor, thought that it might make a difference in other states as well.
Hopefully now there will be a precedent from Michigan which says, no, that's not really right, and here's the reasoning that we're using, and that the other states would find that reasoning persuasive and within the confines and context of their own laws and precedents would say, no, we don't think that that dark store theory really is right, and Michigan's got a point here.
It's something that has certainly come up in other states as well. Michigan's had a lot of these appeals, but, you know, again, Indiana, Wisconsin, Iowa, Texas, Alabama, states all over the place have seen these appeals. It's not the kind of thing you can really resolve in one fell swoop with an act of Congress or a Supreme Court decision because every state has different property tax laws. So really, these battles over dark store appeals are expected to continue.
But you mentioned earlier that there's some concern that when the Michigan Tax Tribunal has handed down these rulings, it has set a precedent, which is then, you know, followed again the next time someone comes up, and again, different sized towns are affected. I guess I'm wondering if people like Dave Maturin and some others who see this as a problem think that maybe the court ruling has set another precedent and has at least been something of a pushback against what the Tax Tribunal has done to date.
Yes, I think that Maturin and others definitely feel that the Escanaba decision is significant because it does push back against those tax tribunal decisions that found in favor of the dark store appeals. I believe the way Maturin put it was that he hoped that this would stop the bleeding in Michigan. And yes, that other states would be looking to this, that other states would no longer be looking to Michigan's tax tribunal saying, okay, these dark store appeals are a go, but rather looking at Michigan's Supreme Court decision that upheld the appeals court finding saying, yeah, I don't think so.
Is there anything we should be looking for next?
One thing to watch for is what does happen when the Michigan Tax Tribunal goes back and reconsiders the Escanaba case. Because again, that's not over, but it has to be reconsidered. And the appeals court has given the tribunal some rather specific instructions for what it does when it reconsiders it. And beyond that, if you keep an eye on how this is playing out in other states, these battles really are expected to continue around the country over this kind of property tax appeal.
Thank you, Sevilla.
Thanks, Gordon.
You can find a link to WMUK reporter Sevilla Mann's story for NPR on the dark store theory and property tax bills at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. A recent report from the Citizens Research Council of Michigan warns that the state's rainy day fund would help weather a mild recession, but probably not a more severe economic downturn. The council has examined how Michigan government puts money away and when it can spend that money. Their report is called Preparing the State of Michigan's Budget for the Next Recession. Eric Lufer is the president of the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. Thanks for being with us again.
Gordon, it's nice to join you again. Thank you for inviting me.
The last time you and I talked, we were talking about the Citizens Research Council report on some major budget challenges which lie ahead for Michigan. I asked you about the state being ready if there's a recession, and you pointed out that recessions inevitably happen. As we sit here and talk today, do we have any idea when that next downturn is coming?
We do not know. I just attended a few conferences where some very smart economists were looking into their crystal ball, looking into the future, and they see continued growth in the economy, both nationally and in Michigan, at a very modest pace, only 2% a year or so of growth of the national economy. So it's not going gangbusters, but as long as it's on an upward trend, that's good. They warned that it's only going to take, you know, maybe a few disruptions and events that might put us into an economy. So while they make the point that recessions or growth periods never grow old, you don't just naturally go into a recession. There are things like North Korea, Saudi Arabia, things that are beyond our control that could cause some disruption and send us down to a path that we're trying to watch out for.
So when that next recession comes, how important is the rainy day fund, as we call it, for trying to mitigate the impact on the citizens of the state?
This is something that, in the big picture, is a fairly new creation for the state, only since the 1970s, really. So, you know, it's been maybe 40 years, but given our long history of us being a state, it's fairly new. And the idea is that generally, when the nation catches a cold, Michigan catches the flu. And so how do you help to weather the down periods and take advantage of the up periods? The alternative to having savings is when things get bad, you increase taxes or you cut services. If you're increasing taxes, you're hurting people and businesses at the time they can least afford to pay more money. You're cutting services. Generally, you're cutting the services to the people that rely on government services and need those services at the times that they're the worst. So, you know, like a person that works during the summer and has the winters where they can't do construction or things like that, it's important to put money aside, and then you have that money to draw on when things are bad. And the question isn't whether we should be doing it, but how much should we be setting aside and how much is enough to make a difference.
And Michigan went through a very unique economic period where there was what we call the single state recession, followed by the national Great Recession. So when you got to the end of all that, was there any money that was left in the state savings account at that point?
No. That's an easy one to answer. So Michigan had done pretty well in stashing some money away in the 1990s. And relative to all the other time that we've had this rainy day fund, this was the most money we've ever had put away for that. But then, as you said, the single state recession came, and you can recall 2001 hit. We had the terrorist strikes and things like that, and the nation went into a recession, very short-lived. But for Michigan, it was the beginning of a almost decade-long recession where manufacturing was hurt and people are leaving the state and so on. So we went into that, and you never know how long this is going to be. Our legislature spent that record amount of money, spent it in 3 years. It was just gone. And then it wasn't available throughout the balance of the single state recession. And when the Great Recession came, that period of 2007 to 2009, when things got very bad nationally, and of course even worse here in Michigan, we didn't have any extra money stashed away. And so everything the state had to do and our local governments had to do to weather that storm was all on the tax and spending side. There was no money in the piggy bank that they could drain and help them get through this. So then comes Governor Snyder, and the economy starts to grow again, and the state's been stashing a little bit of money away each year, not enough to make a difference yet.
Not enough to make a difference. You know, there are, of course, a lot of variables that we can list about a recession. You know, how long does it last? How harsh is it? Perhaps we could even think about what businesses might be affected, and therefore, how does that impact revenues maybe differently as opposed to other businesses? But what can we say right now? If we woke up tomorrow and found out that economic indicators had all gone south, what sort of shape would Michigan be in for a recession?
Yes, so with the fiscal year we're in right now, the state has set some money aside to go into the rainy day fund. And with that money, we'll have almost $900 million stashed away to help. That sounds like a really big number until you put it in the context of $10 billion in general fund and more than that in the school aid fund that all comes from state resources. So yes, $900 million is a lot of money, but when you start spreading it out over the needs of the state. So a commonly used tool for measuring this is how many days of operation could the state go on just from those resources? If you were to assume that all taxes stop tomorrow, how long would the rainy day fund last? And for Michigan, it's only about 10 days. So in the big picture, it's just not very many at all. If it were a mild recession and we had the crystal ball to know it would be only a mild recession, that might be sufficient. But again, the nation gets a cold and Michigan gets the flu, and we know we're usually affected more harsh by these downturns than many other states.
So what does Michigan law actually say about putting money into this rainy day fund? How much can you put in? When can you put it in?
So it's geared in a way to recognize when are the good times, and our legislators have created some triggers to put it in. When the economy is growing, it comes in, and then when it comes out, the law is looking at changes in unemployment, changes in personal income of the state, whether revenue for the state has been down in a prolonged way, and then the legislature has some discretion that if they see the need, if they see things that aren't yet reflected in those measures, then they can do that themselves. Part of your question is how much can be set aside. And the idea in creating the law is they don't want to just have all money being put into the rainy day fund. That means that maybe we as citizens of the state are being taxed at rates above what is needed, and that money is just being put into the piggy bank. It's not helping our state in terms of economic activity. So you're trying to find the right balance. And what's settled on, what we go by right now, is that they don't want any more than 10% of the combined school aid fund and general fund being put aside there. So right now we're at about 4%. So there's a lot of growth that we could do and still be nowhere close to that 10% cap. And part of what our paper says is, given what we know from the last couple of recessions, maybe we should think about that 10% cap and make that a little bit bigger and then really work to get to towards it. And, you know, there's a lot of factors go into that. Michigan really, when you look at state revenue, hasn't recovered from the last recession. So there's a lot of local governments, schools, universities who wish they had that money and it wasn't being put aside. But at the same time, we know it's the right thing to do and we're going to need that at some point.
So you noted that there's also some safeguards in there. So the idea is that the state does not go dipping into that rainy day savings account unless there is a good reason, i.e. an economic downturn, a recession, et cetera.
Yeah, they put the safeguards so that the state can't say, well, you know, look, we just, in order to bring in Amazon, we're going to have to pay a boatload of money and we can just take it out of the rainy day fund or things like that. They put in the safeguards so it has to be related to the economic needs of the state, the reflecting how people are being put out of work, how income levels are down, how manufacturing has changed, and issues like that. And so it really reflects the needs based on economy rather than the whims of our legislators.
Well, as you noted, putting money in the savings account seems like the right thing to do. I know you and I end up often in this part of the conversation where we say, well, the right thing to do versus what is, you know, politically popular. And when the state has surplus money, citizens often want a tax cut or they may want the money spent in other areas. Is that the pressure that lawmakers have to think about?
Yeah, and then when you think about it, there's a strong constituency for tax cuts. We would all like to keep more of our money, whether you're running a business or you're trying to balance your own personal checkbook. More money would be good as opposed to taxes paid to the government. And there's a constituency for services. The schools need money to educate our kids, and we need money for corrections and state police and Medicaid and everything else that our state government does. So there's two pressures pulling at that money. How much money is enough and what should it be used for? And there really isn't a constituency for the rainy day fund. That's why it takes real leadership and foresight by our state legislators to recognize that need and sort of be deaf to some of those other pressures to make sure that they're doing what's good for the state in the long term.
We mentioned the single state recession, then followed by the Great Recession. If we take a somewhat longer historical view, going back to the 70s when the Rainy Day Fund was established, what can we say about how this money set aside has helped the state get through tough economic times?
So it's definitely helped. I don't want to sell it short, but when we look back, we know that the state has never put enough money aside to really make a difference. And when we have hit the hard times, the state has been quick to draw on those resources, so they haven't lasted long when we've entered a recession. And you know, it's easy sort of Monday morning quarterbacking to make those assessments now, because at the time you never know how long a recession will be or how deep, all those things we just talked about. But we can look back historically and know that even though they sound like big numbers, they just haven't gone very far when we've lived through those recessions.
Eric Lufer is the president of the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon. It's always my pleasure to join you on these shows.
You can find a link to the Council's report on Michigan's preparedness for the next recession at crcmich.org and through a link at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.